Good afternoon and happy Friday. Thanks for joining the Wintrust Business Lunch with me, Jisoo Yi. We're going to kick off the show by talking a little bit more with WGN Radio's very own Orion Samuelson. Hi, Orion.
How do you do? And I hope you're doing well.
We are hanging in there. Just curious, where are you right now and how have you been doing? Hopefully you and your family are safe.
And Gloria and I are just fine. We're in our home in Sun City, Huntley, and that's where we had not planned to be. We'd planned to fly back to Arizona about 2 weeks ago, but my wife, who is smarter than I am, said, I don't think we should be on an airplane, so I don't think we should go, and she won, as she usually does, but it was a wise choice, yes. Yeah, so I'm in Huntley, Illinois, where skies are cloudy, but at least yesterday's snow is gone.
Before we talk about agriculture and the food supply chain, I know that you always have your journalism hat on when you're talking about the markets, but I wanted to ask you about your opinion, if you're willing to share. Is the worst behind us, and sort of what have you been thinking about as the markets have been so volatile in the last couple of weeks?
Well, all of my life, and that's a fairly long life at this point, I've had two rules concerning markets. Never sell on a down market, because there'll be somebody out there who is bargain hunting, and they'll see Apple or this stock down at a price that they missed earlier, and they'll come back in. Bargain hunters is what I call them. So I tend to agree that when this is over, and it will be over, we will bounce back pretty well. That's why I don't like to do any selling on down markets. The other rule that I pretty much stick to, I don't look at my portfolio more than twice a year. Every 6 months I take a look at it, because if you look at it from a daily basis, the past month is a good reason why I think it's dangerous to trade daily when you're looking at markets that you can't really expect that you know more than anybody else on what those markets are going to do. So I'm just watching with interest, but I think our economy will be back, because the numbers for everything else are just too good. I mean, even the consumer's release that we got this morning, up 0.2%. I wasn't expecting that, but it says we are still shopping.
Maybe the worst is behind us for now?
Well, for now, but a week from now, it could be down again, because the one thing the market does not like, it doesn't like
uncertainty,
mystery, or uncertainty. It just doesn't like that, and I don't blame it. I don't like it either, but we can't control that.
Can't tell you how reassuring and comforting it's been to hear you talk about the farmers working so hard and the folks getting the foods to the grocery stores, and so we can have food on our table. Just wanted to have you back on to reassure us that there's plenty of food that's headed to grocery stores and plenty in the food supply chain.
Well, let me say, first of all, you can't shut down a cattle farm or a dairy farm or a produce farm, because Mother Nature decides when the produce is ready to be harvested. And, of course, cows have to be milked two or three times every day, so you can't shut it down like you can an assembly line. So agriculture has not shut down. I don't think it's even slowed down. Some of the meetings have had to be canceled and that sort of thing. But, you know, I'm kind of concerned that we don't talk about agriculture as much as we should, but on the other hand, that's a compliment, because it says our farmers and ranchers and produce growers are doing what they do every day. And the other thing that they can do it from home, because that's where they do most of their work when they're taking care of livestock or creating fruits, nuts, produce, and that sort of thing. And the interesting challenge, I think, that we face now agriculturally is transportation and labor, because it's more difficult to get labor to do some of those jobs that American kids don't want to do anymore. And so we're concerned about that. But I'm also concerned about the trucking industry, because they're facing some real challenges. But again, if you see empty shelves in the grocery store or the supermarket, It's probably the toilet paper shelf, but it's not going to be the food shelf because our farmers are able to produce, and as long as Mother Nature gives them the weather to do it, they'll get it done.
Well, thanks, Orianne, for giving us some of your time. Just wanted to ask you really quickly, I've always loved your voice, as many people do, but does that also mean you have a great singing voice, too?
No, it doesn't. I recorded a record back in the days when we did 45 RPMs, I recorded a record, and it sold about 100,000, but that's the only singing I've done.
Oh, wow. Sounds like you might just have a great singing voice. Thank you to Orianne Samuelson. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said today that the coronavirus economic stimulus bill before Congress is not an airline bailout, and that taxpayers will be compensated for relief given to companies hobbled by the global pandemic. And joining us to enlighten us more on the subject is WGN radio host of Eye on Travel, which you can listen to from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturdays right here on WGN radio, is Peter Greenberg. Hi, Peter.
How are you?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Good. And just one note, tomorrow we're going to actually be from 3 to 6
on
WGN. Yes.
Love it. We need more of you. Trust me. You know, people have been loving that they can call and ask you questions and that you have an answer for them. So wanted to get your take on what the Treasury Secretary said and sort of what sort of help the airline industry is going to need, if this is going to be enough money. I know that Boeing said no to any government funding. Sort of just wanted to get your take on everything.
Well, first and foremost, it gets down to a definition of terms of what constitutes a bailout, a loan, or a grant. In this case, we're talking about a $50 billion package in which $25 billion goes to the airlines in the form of a loan, and the rest of it can be grants. The way that it's been structured by the Congress is to put the workers first so that the money doesn't go to executives or stock buyback plans. However, the one thing that's missing from this, which is sort of disappointing, is any kind of consumer protection component. Because at the very moment that the airlines are getting this money, many of your listeners, many of my listeners, are being told by the airlines they won't get a refund on their previously booked but untaken trips, but they'll get a voucher good for a year, which means we're also giving the airlines a loan, if you want to really define it that way. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all shakes out, because the airlines at this moment are bleeding money, no doubt about it. They're parking planes. If you went to the airports in Pittsburgh or Roswell, New Mexico, or Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Atlanta, you would see taxiways and runways just crowded with parked planes from American, United, Delta. And they've cut their international schedules back 95%, essentially not flying them. Domestically, they're down maybe to 40% of their original schedule. And even those planes are operating at maybe 20% load factors. There was one flight this week that I take all the time, American Flight 1 from JFK to LAX. It's their premier flight in the morning. It left with six people on board. So we're dealing with a serious economic problem here, but we have short-term and long-term solutions. Right now, what we're talking about now is a short-term solution. The long-term remains to be dealt with.
So, Peter, just to get to the basics, for people that are questioning why even help the airline industry, what would you say to them?
Well, the argument can be made, and by the way, it has been made, that the airlines are critical to the supply line of this country, to the travel and infrastructure of this country, and they need to continue to fly. And I can support that argument. The same way you can argue that hotels are critical to business in this country. People need a place to stay, and they got to get there. I get that. But in the long term, we have to go back and take a look at the money that the airlines made by not operating as airlines to begin with. Ancillary fees, frequent flyer programs, both of those make more money for the airlines than they actually make as operating airlines. Then you add in stock buybacks and executive bonuses, and all of a sudden we have an economic disruption, and they're in trouble. So we have to address this in the long term, or we're going to get right back to where we were before this ever happened.
I know that stock buybacks were a particular sticking point. Do you agree with sort of the parameters that were put around this bailout?
Well, you know, I look at it a somewhat different way. I believe that you have to take care of your employees first. You have to take care of your equipment. You have to take care of obviously health and safety. And then once you do that, and you do that 100%, if there's money left over and you're making a profit, I'm not going to stand in your way. Do whatever you want to do. But right now we have a national emergency, and we have to get our priorities straight.
You just talked about making sure to take care of your employees. Also in the news was that American Airlines had a flight attendant that died from coronavirus, based out of Philadelphia, in his mid-60s, and did have underlying health issues. Have you been hearing from folks working at the airlines about concerns about their own safety?
Well, look at it this way. Right now in the United States, we have nearly 92,000 confirmed cases. We have nearly 1,400 deaths. If you take a look at that as a percentage of the total population, that means you're going to have 1% of flight attendants and 1% of nuclear physicists and 1% of school teachers who are going to be, you know, who may die from this, the way the rates are going right now. So I'm not surprised that we're going to see some of these situations happen. The real question is, are we going to continue to fly the airlines? Are we still going to fly domestic service? Are we going to practice social distancing? The irony here is, if you really want social distancing, get on an airplane today. No one will be anywhere near 30 feet from you.
Very true.
It's true. But remember, we're dealing also with an economic impact here. We have to do both at the same time. But the priority has to be health and safety first.
Well, I know you were talking about consumer protection throughout this, and you've been giving some advice in terms of canceling tickets and making sure that you get a full refund versus just a voucher.
You bet.
How do people do that?
You got to go back to the fact that the airlines are not necessarily fully disclosing your rights to you. What a surprise. You need to, you know, that's why I'm around, to tell you what they are.
Thank goodness.
Under the U.S. Department of Transportation rules and regulations, if the airline cancels, not you, but if the airline cancels your flight, no matter what you paid for your ticket, whether it's a non-refundable ticket, a full fare ticket, or whatever, you are entitled to a full refund to go directly back to the original form of payment. Now, the airlines are not doing that because they're desperate to hold on to money and to preserve cash, so they're offering people, in many cases even an incentive, saying, okay, we'll not only give you a voucher for what you paid for your ticket and you have 12 months in which to use it, some of the airlines are even saying, we'll give you 20% more than what you paid for your airline ticket in the form of that voucher. But let me share with you a specific example that will illustrate why that may not be such a good idea. Last year, just take like the city of Dallas. 87% of the people who lived in the region of Dallas who flew American Airlines last year only flew the airline once. So we're not talking about mega road warriors or major frequent flyers. We're talking about leisure travelers who saved up their hard-earned money to take that once-a-year vacation. You're not going to let them get their money back? No, you're not going to hold their money for a year. We're not banks. We're passengers.
That makes
sense.
And
in a situation like that, we should get our money back, or at least the choice of it. If you want to have a voucher, you should have a choice for that. But you can't be denied your money back. Now, the problem is, it's not just the airlines. It's the hotels. It's the tour operators. It's many foreign operators where U.S. credit laws don't apply, where the U.S. Department of Transportation rules do not apply. And then, of course, there's the issue of who did you buy your ticket from? Was it an online travel agency? They're just middlemen, and they'll always hide behind the airlines when something like this happens, saying, well, we can't do anything. You have to contact the airline directly. Well, good luck with that. So the bottom line here is the people who are the hardest working people out there on the front lines right now are the travel agents. These are the guys and the women who've had no income stream for over a month and a half, who are spending 18 hours a day trying to get people their money back or rebooking their flights. And they need a big shout out from us.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. Really appreciate you. And we need you more than ever now. And thank goodness you've got an extra hour tomorrow. Peter Greenberg, host of Eye on Travel, right here on WGN Radio. Your show starts tomorrow, Saturday, at 3 o'clock, right?
It does. And in the second hour of the show, the entire show is devoted to answering emails. So if anybody wants to write me, it's peter@petergreenberg.com, and we'll deal with all those issues on the air tomorrow.
Way to go. Thank you so much for being with us, Peter. Stay safe.
You got it. Thanks.
So is your car lease up by chance? Is there a warning light blinking on your dash? I mean, can you even take your car in for repairs? Here to clarify how the automotive industry is operating in the age of coronavirus is Jerry Haggerty. He is the co-owner of Jerry Haggerty Chevrolet in Glen Ellen, Haggerty Ford in West Chicago, and Haggerty Buick GMC in Villa Park. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, G. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being with us.
So sure.
These are all questions everybody is probably going to have to face in the next coming weeks if they haven't already. Are you guys open? Are you up and running?
Yes, we are. Governor Pritzker had labeled car dealerships essential services. We certainly believe we are. So the dealerships are up and operating.
Well, I'm sure you've had to pivot the way you guys do business. So what are some of the changes that have been happening in operations?
So the changes that started immediately certainly was to take a look at public safety and our employee safety. So the first thing was let's take a close look at what we're doing for sanitizing and deep cleaning areas, common areas for customers and employees. Not that we weren't clean dealerships before, we were, but, you know, obviously uncharted water, so taking that to a whole new level. So that was the first thing that took effect everywhere. But we're holding daily briefings at our dealerships, literally daily, because, you know, this is a daily changing event.
Absolutely. So definitely a lot more deep cleanings happening and meetings to ensure that customers are safe and then also your workers are safe as well.
Exactly. You know, you asked, you know, or how our business has changed. You know, the automobile business is in constant change, and most customers have figured out a long time ago that they can do a lot of things online. And thank goodness that is the case. So in that way, a lot of customers are still going online. They're making service appointments. They're making appointments for the sales department. Our sales departments are only open by appointment, so our front doors are literally locked. So the only way you're coming in is if you have an appointment.
Oh, so definitely call ahead. That was one of the questions I was going to ask you, if people could just show up. But definitely call ahead and make appointments. And I'm guessing that can help you control how many people are in your dealership at a certain time.
Exactly. And it helps us with staffing. So, you know, getting through this literally day by day. We're learning each day a little better way to do it. But so far, it's worked out fairly well. Now, obviously, I'm not going to pretend business as usual. Business is down quite a bit, understandably. However, dealerships are still open and service departments are still busy.
So if you do need to bring your car in for a repair, just call in and make an appointment?
Absolutely. I'm not sure what our breakdown is, but I would say half probably call and half go online, either from a mobile device or on their computer, and can very easily pick a slot on when they want to bring the vehicle in. Dealerships are ready to provide either transportation, courtesy transportation, or a loaner car if the customer doesn't feel comfortable sitting at the dealership while they wait. So we're making all those, but again, those have always been in place.
Okay, so business as usual in terms of that. So, but if someone's really antsy about maybe leaving their house, you'll send someone out to pick up the car and bring it back to them.
Absolutely, that's something that we did in a limited basis for years, but we're doing it more now for customers who don't feel comfortable. We also have a drop-off area outside the dealership, so that for those customers who feel safer just dropping the vehicle off, dropping the keys in a drop-off container, and we can service the vehicle, put it back outside, and they can pick it up at their, you know, when they'd like to.
That's great, Jerry. So you mentioned a lot of online shopping that's happening. It sounds like you're embracing a lot more digital commerce. You even have at-home test drives. What are those?
Yes, absolutely. So if a customer would like to look at any product and take it for a test drive, we'll make arrangements to, if the customer does not want to come in the store, we will have that vehicle delivered either to their place of business or their home for them to take a test drive and put the vehicle through its paces, and, you know, no obligation, just a way to, you know, just make it easier for the customer.
And I'm assuming there's some deep cleaning happening in those cars that people are test driving as well.
Absolutely. That's done beforehand, and we're also added the protection of thin plastic covers for the seats and for the steering wheel, and you know, the vehicle's wiped down before and after the use. So doing everything we can just to, you know, guarantee that the vehicles are clean and sanitized.
Well, I was thinking somebody might have a lease that's up, or they may desperately need a car. I know that a lot of financial planners and economists are suggesting, saving money and foregoing big purchases, but a lot of people just can't wait. And we're hearing about low interest rates as well. I mean, are you guys having any particular incentives or deals because of everything that's happening?
Absolutely. And let me address the lease thing first. So, yeah, we do a lot of leasing. And you constantly have customers that are coming out of a lease wanting to go into another lease. And for those who are uncomfortable with the timing because of the COVID-19, I believe it's just a simple call to whoever the leasing company is, whether it's Ford or General Motors or whatever. I'm sure they will make arrangements to extend the lease or to make arrangements for the customer. So that's not really too much of a concern for the customer. As far as the special deals. Right, absolutely. So I think it's important. I think all the manufacturers that we work with, General Motors and Ford, don't want to come off as opportunistic, and neither does the dealership. But in the same way, just like the stock market, when stocks go down, some people think that's not the time to buy, and others think it's the perfect time to buy. So much like the car business, rates are 0% for 84 months. We've never seen that before. Payment delays of up to 120 days.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah.
Right. So for those who are in the market, there literally is no better time to get a great deal. But again, it's up to the customer and what they feel comfortable with. But there's really some fantastic deals out there.
Well, Jerry, will you repeat that in terms of I think that brings a great sense of peace of mind with a bigger purchase like this that you could you could waive payments for a certain amount of time.
Correct. General Motors and Ford have a program where your payment you can take the option to delay your payment, and some won't take it, but there's really no reason not to. No first payment for up to 120 days, and we know of a 0% interest for up to 84 months. If you can get free money, you might as well take it as long as it's available. You can always pay the loan off early. But it's just a great actually what we're coming up against is not so much that the deals aren't great deals. We're still feeling that our customers are still feeling out, hey, what's my job situation look like? Am I going to have a job in 2 weeks? So that's more what we're coming up against is customers just kind of feeling out where they are financially before they take advantage of any deal that's out there.
I'm getting a texter from the 815 asking, what if somebody is in a lease, but they want to get out of a lease and maybe into a newer car and take advantage of an opportunity right now?
Absolutely. You can really terminate a lease at any time. It's a question of equity. We face that every day, weekly, certainly at our dealerships. We have a customer who wants to get out a little early. Manufacturers actually have deals where they have rebates designed around a customer coming out of a lease early, actually making their last two or three payments or an additional rebate to exactly do that. So we anticipate that to remain strong to kind of spur business.
And just quickly wanted to ask you, are you worried about supply at all, about inventory or shortage of vehicles or parts?
Well, I think dealerships are all over the spectrum on that. Each dealership owner makes a decision on, do I want my inventory at what level? So, those dealerships that had low inventory going into this, they may end up a few months from now wishing they would have stocked up a little bit. No one knew this was coming. So am I worried? No, I'm not worried because I think this recovery will be rather quick. Obviously the second and maybe part of the third quarter is going to be challenging, but I think we are going to see quite a boom because there's a lot of pent-up demand. People want to go back to their lives. We'll get a control on COVID-19, and once that's done and people feel safe, they want to go back to being the consumers that Americans are.
Jerry Haggerty, he's the co-owner of Jerry Haggerty Chevrolet in Glen Ellen, Haggerty Ford in West Chicago, and Haggerty Buick GMC in Villa Park. Is there one Jerry Haggerty website, Jerry?
Well, we have one group website, which is HaggertyAutoGroup.com, but otherwise we have individual URLs for each dealership. But HaggertyAutoGroup.com is one common group.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, Jerry. Stay safe and healthy and well.
Thank you, G. You too. Have a great day.
Well, we know that retailers all over the country are shutting down and layoffs are planned and some have been announced. In fact, we were hearing some of the bigger box stores are, we've been hearing through some listeners texting in that they've actually are getting their paychecks so far. Joining us now is Brandon Rowe. He's the host of a podcast called The Fashion Consumer, and he's a specialist in online technology solutions for brand marketing. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, G. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Absolutely. Thanks for being with us. Hope you're doing well and staying healthy. What do we know so far about what's happening with the retail industry, especially with the fashion?
Well, yeah. Well, as you mentioned, I mean, retailers across the country are shutting down. Layoffs have been planned and announced. The last jobless claims report, more than 3 million jobless claims were filed. That is 2% of the workforce. I mean, this is huge. And, of course, people are under quarantine, they're locked away, the stock market has tanked, and people are feeling poorer. And, of course, the virus itself, as it spreads into communities all over the country, has made people afraid for their lives. And naturally, it's in this environment that consumers will tend to pull back from everything that isn't directly related to survival. And we are seeing this in the retail environment. I mean, they're buying canned food and water, and toilet paper, of course. But discretionary spending is suffering heavily, and this is especially the case in the luxury area. Burberry announced, for example, that last week sales had dropped 40 to 50% in the previous 6 weeks for that, and they think it could get worse. It is a very fluid situation. It is changing day by day, but one thing that is for sure is that the world is very different than even a few weeks ago.
It's been nice also to hear about a lot of retailers and even luxury brands actually trying to help in the fight by switching over production to hospital gowns and masks and that type of situation, or making hand sanitizer instead of perfume. So that's been incredibly great
very
to
true.
Hear about. Yeah. With everybody at home, though, are more people going to shop online, and are there more deals headed our way?
Well, that definitely is.
If I mean, they have, you know, behavior. Yeah, of course, if they have, you know, a confirmed salary or, you know, all of that as well.
Yes. No, I mean, even though we've had 3 million jobless claims, that is 2% of the workforce, that still means that a lot of people are still working. It's uncertainty that is pulling them back, but they're stuck at home. They obviously have more screen time. They're bored, and the mail is still delivering because it is an essential service. So yes, they will buy more online and online. And in fact, they already are. Amazon announced last Monday that they're looking to hire like 100,000 workers to deal with additional demand. And Walmart and Dollar General and I believe Target as well, they're all looking to hire more people to deal with all of this increased demand. And in my own conversations with fashion brands, specifically where I spend my area, we've seen that things were fine up until COVID-19 hit their home market. Then sales just plummeted. They cratered. But as people get bored, they're starting to see site traffic increasing, and it's starting to turn into a trickle of sales. Now, a little longer out, we should see some bounce back. And consumer spending is restrained right now, but consumers still want to consume. And once we can leave our houses and feel safe again, we might just want to celebrate that. This is the brush with mortality phenomenon, and we should experience some sort of short-term bounce.
I have noticed that it does seem like there are a lot of sales happening for non-essential items like clothing and other items, beauty products. Is that one of the things that retailers are doing to try to push online sales?
Well, yes, they still have their targets, their sales targets that they are desperately trying to hit, of course. And there's also the fact that our economy was not designed to shut down entirely in one go. Businesses are not developed. There's high fixed costs. If they have retail locations, they obviously have rent and leases, and that just can't be shut off. So they're promoting these heavy sales in order to generate cash to keep going, because otherwise they might be forced into insolvency.
Of course, we're talking about a lot of non-essential items, and for people that have steady income coming in, if they do want to shop and if these businesses do want to stay in business and not have to close permanently, what are some of the things that they can do to throughout this situation? You know, it's not going to be business as usual for them.
No, and obviously it's trying to reduce costs. They can look at fixed items as best they can, but renegotiating contracts can take time and be difficult to do. So they'll look at the discretionary items. And for a lot of firms outside of the payroll, the biggest item is marketing and advertising, and they'd be tempted to pull back from that. And that would really be a mistake. Now more than ever, brands have to stay in front of their customers, remind them that they're around, remind them that they can be of service. And yes, it does make sense to pull back from new customer advertising, given the environment, but resources still need to be put into nurturing the existing customer base. So when they're ready to buy, there they are.
And of course, they want to utilize technology as well to make sure that they're connecting with their customers.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, technology, we were already on a trend to continue to embrace more technology in our various transactions. We shop online, but naturally, the fact that consumers are now stuck in their homes, this has been heavily accelerated. And as we're starting to see it in the market, we've seen video conferencing, for example, both for people working from home to interact with their bosses and coworkers, but we're also seeing it, say, in the fashion business, where stylists are video conferencing with their clients to help them pick their wardrobe and identify new pieces to buy. We're seeing live streaming. It was a new trendy marketing thing over the last couple of years, where a presenter walks around a retail store and shows off items that can then be bought online in real time. Well, since consumers can't go into stores, this has accelerated because, you know, they still might want to buy, and they see this live streaming through the internet, and that's the way to stimulate the purchase if they can't go in directly.
Well, some creative ways that hopefully that retailers can keep people on their payroll so that people can continue to get paychecks. Thanks so much to Brandon Rowe. He is the host of a podcast and also Why Fashion Brands Die author, and he's a specialist in online technology solutions for brand marketing. Thanks so much, Brandon.
Thank you.